We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, Lakers Nation. Welcome in. Trevor Lane here for LakersNation.com, your home for everything Lakers. Need to talk a little bit about the closing lineup. That's right, not the starting lineup, but the closing lineup today. I want to get into that, plus a little bit of news about, that guy named Kyrie Irving, as though we haven't heard enough about him. Joining me today is Ron Gutterman from LakersNation.com. Ron, how are you doing?
Doing all right. Yeah, just kind of waiting for this season to start. It's, this is the dog days of August, but it has been quiet for sure.
Well, and it's tough too, because all of the trade stuff feels like it's still out there. You know, there hasn't been a lot of movement. We get some rumors every now and then, kind of some little whispers here and there, but it just doesn't feel like there's that sense of urgency at the moment for any of the teams. Maybe training camp will provide that once that starts to come up, but that's end of September. So we could be in for the long haul in terms of this staring contest that's going on, despite how frustrated it's made NBA fans.
Yeah, and I think the Lakers are in a particularly rough spot because they're in sort of a desperation mode to make a trade, right? But they can't make a trade until the two bigger dominoes fall in Kevin Durant and Donovan Mitchell. So they're kind of just sitting there like, we need to make a trade, but the only people that will trade with us are not going to trade with us until these trades go down first. It's a very difficult situation for the Lakers to be in, for sure.
It really does feel like every single move that we've heard, whether it's the Utah move, the Knicks move, the Nets move for Kyrie, these are all held up by other trades that have to happen first, with the exception of the Pacers move. That's the only move. Like, if Jeannie Buss went to Rob Pelinka right now and said, that's it, I can't have Russell Westbrook on this roster for one more day, you need to trade him right now, Indiana is really the only option outside of maybe doing something with the Spurs, but the only one that we've heard some active rumors about, it's the Pacers. Every other deal is contingent upon something else happening first.
Yeah. And I think there's a reason that the Pacers deal hasn't happened. It could be because the Pacers are asking for too much, or the Lakers are unwilling to do certain things, but it's also because the Pacers deal is probably not their priority. And their priority is being held up by other trades. So it's just a matter of waiting.
Well, the sense is that the priority is Kyrie Irving. You know, this isn't everything, but Phil Handy recently compared Kyrie to Kobe. What do you think about that?
I think he said something along the lines of, like, if he was 6'6", you'd see a mirror image of Kobe. You know, if we want to talk about, like, what they do on a basketball court, I don't really see it all that much. I mean, love Phil Handy, but they're decidedly two different players. I think Kobe is obviously, eons better defender. I think both are tough shot makers. Both, like, that's their claim to fame, is they can make tough shots and make them look easy. So they're similar in that vein, but I think, Kyrie's a little more crafty, whereas Kobe's a little more like head of steam, less finesse and more just like pure skill type thing. I don't know. They're a little different, but I see the similarity in terms of the tough shot making and the, footwork and stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's really what it is, I think. But I mean, big picture, you've got a Lakers assistant coach that's comparing that Phil Handy is comparing Kyrie to Kobe. I mean, that's a good sign to begin with, that they hold Kyrie in high regard, even if the comparison isn't all that spot on, right? Maybe in terms of the way they approach the game or whatever. You mentioned the tough shot making, but I think it's just a little bit more, and again, this isn't like concrete, rock solid, hard hitting news here, but it's just a little bit more that we can add to this growing pile of evidence that the Kyrie trade is the number one option for the Lakers, and that if they have that on the table, they would do that before a Pacers deal, a Knicks deal, a Jazz deal, a Spurs deal, anything else. Kyrie is option 1A standing alone.
Yeah, I think it's probably the only deal in the entire league landscape that they would potentially throw in the second first-round pick for. I think it's the only one they'd even consider doing that. The Pacers deal, the Jazz deal, Knicks, Spurs, I think they wouldn't even touch those if the asking price was two firsts. Kyrie is the only one that they'd say, well, okay, maybe. Like, let's talk about it.
Right. Agreed. Yeah, I think that's the one where you probably say, all right, particularly because, you know, the LeBron factor, right? The LeBron factor matters here too. If LeBron is saying, hey, you guys get Kyrie, I'm signing that extension, that I think that comes into play here. I don't know if he does that. Maybe he does, but it feels less likely he would put that out there for a Pacers trade or a Jazz trade or something like that.
Yeah.
But let's talk a little bit, as much as we've gone into, you know, the various trade rumors and all of that. What if there's no trade? Let's say no trade material, which is possible. I know it's not a pleasant thought for Lakers fans, but it's possible that the Lakers go into the regular season. And again, we still see training camp as potentially maybe a soft deadline for the Lakers to get a deal done. But let's say you go into the season with Russell Westbrook still on your roster. The Lakers, every offer that's out there is one that would fleece them in a deal. Teams are holding this desperation over them, and the Lakers just can't find a deal that doesn't actively destroy their future or make them worse or whatever. Just nothing is out there. What do you do if you're the Lakers in terms of the closing lineup? Because we've talked a lot about the starting five and how, you know, who's going to be in the first five and all of that kind of stuff. But it's the closing lineup that typically matters more. You look at last season, I mean, you had guys like DeAndre Jordan, Kent Bazemore in the starting five, and then sometimes getting leaned upon to close games as well. It took a little while for the Lakers to, well, and I guess it really took the whole season, because I don't think they ever really found a consistent closing lineup or even starting lineup. They had, 41 different starting fives. So in terms of a closing lineup, let's assume, and I know this is wild here, but let's assume LeBron and Anthony Davis are in the closing lineup. Building out from there, you're Darvin Ham. What skill sets are you trying to put alongside them? And then let's try to find some players to match those skill sets.
Yeah, I think, you're obviously, it's the same thing we've been saying since Anthony Davis was traded to the Lakers. It's three-point shooting and perimeter defense is kind of what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. It's the formula that won them the championship. It's surround LeBron and AD with 3-and-D wings. And you pretty much have a guaranteed success rate with that. Now, on this roster specifically, there isn't a ton of that to go around, or even really any of that to go around. So it's really about maximizing each individual. You know, if this player over here is a really great three-point shooter, well, then he should be in the lineup. And then you counteract that by putting someone who can't really shoot but is a, you know, quality, known commodity, good defender. That's kind of what you're looking for, is to mix and match to get the closest to 3-and-D wings next to LeBron and AD.
Who's the best three-point shooter on the roster right now with no trade?
LeBron James.
that's the problem. So how do you build out this closing lineup, right? If you're talking about trying to mix and match, which I think you're right. Like, let's say if they were to make a trade, you could take a Buddy Hield and then maybe pair him with, I don't know, I mean, just throw a name out there, Stanley Johnson, something like, you know, a guy who's more defense first, switchy, to combat the lack of three-point shooting of Buddy Hield, and vice versa, right? So with the lineup where the roster is set as it is, who are you turning towards? And I guess before we even get to that, is Russell Westbrook in the closing lineup for you?
Probably not, right?
We know him is going to have, according to reports, he's going to have the power to bench Russell Westbrook, whether it's out of the starting lineup or closing. I'd imagine it would start as benching him out of the closing lineup before he just benches him completely. But you're saying no Russ closing the game.
I think obviously with injuries last year, we never saw a ton of Russ, LeBron, AD together. But I think we got enough to know that in closing moments, it doesn't work. It can work at other points in the game. There are times where it did work, but it felt like in the closing moments, it really never worked. And a part of that is Russell Westbrook off the ball is no good. And Russell Westbrook on the ball is quite good, but it's worse than LeBron James on the ball. So it's just kind of like you can't have them both in a closing lineup together without hampering what you can do in a closing set.
Our teams will sell out to pack the paint and leave Russell Westbrook. And I'll tell you the part that terrifies me, because I think that Russell Westbrook gets a little bit too much flack. I think that he's better than what we saw last season. I'm not saying he's a good fit for this roster. He's not. I'm not saying I don't want to see a trade happen. I do want to see a trade happen. I do think the Lakers need to make a move here. But what terrifies me is that teams are going to try to bait him into taking that 15 to 18 foot jumper, particularly late in games, by really selling out to stop LeBron, to stop AD, to pack the paint. And they're going to gladly give Westbrook that shot. And Lakers fans are going to be covering their eyes whenever, because he's going to take them. I think he's going to take those shots, because I mean, it's hard when you're Russell Westbrook and you've been this guy and you've been the MVP and teams are running away from you when you've got the ball in your hands and you've got a wide open shot and this is your chance to win the game. That's a tough spot to be in. And I don't think the Lakers want to be in that business of Russell Westbrook having the ball and being given the opportunity to shoot that particular shot.
Yeah, I think, again, there are times during the game where it can work. But I just don't see in a closing moment, if, you know, let's say you're down three or down four and you need a bucket now, having Russ and LeBron creates a very easy path for the defense to just say, all right, we're putting two, three guys on LeBron, and Russ, go ahead, do whatever you want. We don't care, because you'll either score at the rim, which that doesn't really help if you're down three or four, or you're going to have to shoot a three, and good luck. Like, We're okay with the odds of you missing that. And that's a really difficult thing to have. So I just don't see a world in which he can consistently close next to LeBron.
Is that a problem, do you think, in terms of the locker room? Will Russell Westbrook be accepting of that if he is benched out of the closing lineup? Crunch time, close game, the Lakers need to go win. And Darvin Ham says, we need to win, so Russ, you're sitting over here.
No, I mean, he'll never be okay with that, I think. That's not Russell Westbrook's thing. And look, I don't blame him. He's done a lot in this league in terms of like putting up numbers and sure, getting to the playoffs. Like he has done a ton. He has earned respect. And if he feels he earns a spot in the closing lineup, I don't blame him for that. He's done a lot in this league, but that doesn't make it true this season. And that doesn't make it true on this roster. And I don't know if he's going to be super like receptive of that, which is part of why we are so like adamant that a trade needs to happen, because beyond the bad on-court fit, he's not ready to recognize that it's a bad on-court fit, and it's because of him. Like that's what he's not ready to recognize.
And this is, I mean, this is a whole other discussion on Russ, but this is going to be important for him and his longevity in the league, is him understanding this very situation and what he needs to do to either make himself an option to be on the floor or just become accepting of only being useful in certain situations, for, you know, particularly with this Lakers roster, with the way it's set up. We talked about the lack of 3-point shooting. It might be a different story if every player on the floor, except for Russ, was a 38 to 42% 3-point shooter or something like that, then things look very different, but that's just not the reality of this Lakers roster. They very much did not build this roster for the success of Russell Westbrook. This is not built to make him look good at all. But okay, so I'm in agreement, though. I'm in agreement with Ron. Russell Westbrook, he's not in my closing lineup. Who is your first choice out of everybody else to be in this closing lineup? You've got some new guys coming in. You've got Thomas Bryant. You've got Damian Jones, if you want to go to bigs. You've got some holdovers on the wings. You've got Stanley Johnson. You've got Wenyen Gabriel in there. Of course, Austin Reeves. Kendrick Nunn, if he's healthy, should he be an option? What about Lonnie Walker? This guy got the taxpayer mid-level. Juan Toscano-Anderson. Troy Brown Jr., Talen Horton-Tucker. If you had to pick your first player, who's going into that closing group?
Probably Austin Reeves. I think he's done the most of anyone outside of Russell Westbrook. I mean, he's done the most outside of anyone on the roster to prove that he is a good fit next to LeBron and AD. And I think if we're talking about 3-and-D wings, he's like the closest. He's barely a wing, and he's not a super great three-point shooter yet, but he's like the closest thing to a 3-and-D, like a pure 3-and-D wing on the roster.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So I think that's where you start. You have to start there. The other two is where it gets interesting. And we didn't really discuss this beforehand. We may completely disagree on this because just there's so many options that are just kind of like whatever. That it's kind of like you could go a million different ways with this probably not be wrong.
It's the grab bag, right? I mean, you could just reach in and do a blind pick of some of these guys, and you could wind up accidentally coming up with a good lineup. I will agree with you on Austin Reeves. I think that he's the kind of guy that just makes plays. They don't always show up in the stat sheet. I know people compare him to Alex Caruso a lot. They're not really the same player, but I also like him, his versatility as a secondary creator. I think that's important in a closing lineup as well. LeBron gets doubled. He swings the ball out. If it finds the hands of Austin Reeves, you know, if he puts the ball on the floor, he's got the vision. He can create. He can get an open look for somebody else as well as find his own shot. So I think those are important qualities. But you're right. Where you go next, there could be a lot of different options here. I guess the next thing, though, that we needed to discuss, that we need to cover, is Anthony Davis your center? Or is it Thomas Bryant, Damian Jones, one of those guys in there instead, Wenyen Gabriel even at center?
I would need to see. It wouldn't be, for me at least, you probably disagree. For me, it wouldn't be Damian Jones. Or Wenyen Gabriel.
He's my guy.
Yeah, you know, I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm with you on that.
I think I need to see, I think we all need to see, like, what Thomas Bryant is defensively, coming off of the injury. Like, what does he look like on defense? I think we know what he is offensively, which is a pretty solid stretch big that can be a lob threat, but also can, you know, pull up from 18 feet, even the 3-point line. Like, he can do that. He has the versatility on offense. I think what we're waiting to see is sort of what he looks like, you know, with his lateral quickness on defense and his rim protection. Can he provide that? Can he, you know, step out and guard a wing for, you know, a few seconds before some help comes? Like, can he provide that? If his athleticism is what it was pre-injury and there's been no drop-off and he's just that same guy, I think there's an argument that he might be a good fit in that closing lineup, but it's kind of an unknown right now. So he's sort of a question mark there. If he is his best self, you know, what he was when he first got to Washington, if he's his best self, I put him in that closing lineup. But if he's not, which it's very possible, then I just couldn't.
I'm operating under the assumption that Anthony Davis is the five because that's what we've historically seen work in crunch time until Thomas Bryant proves me otherwise. Even though Damian Jones is my guy, I agree. I think you want the floor spacing. I think to close the game, you want as much versatility to deal with any situation as possible. You want the guys on the floor to be as switchy as possible, to be as adaptable as possible on the offensive end. And I'm not sure that Thomas Bryant provides you that. I think as a big, he provides more of it than Damian Jones does because of his ability to potentially be a floor spacer. But until we see it, I'm rolling with AD at the five in my closing five.
Until Thomas Bryant can prove, whether that's in the starting lineup or in whatever rotational minutes he's for sure getting, if he can prove that he is as versatile defensively as he is offensively, until he proves it, AD has to be the five. So I completely agree there. It's just he's the only question mark where it's like he could be in the closing lineup or he could not be, depending on which version of him we're getting.
Okay, so we've got AD at the five. You've got LeBron, assuming he's the four. Austin Reeves is in there. You could run him. You could slot him anywhere one through three, I believe. I think this we get a little bit too locked into positions here. But who else are you putting on the floor with that group?
My next pick is probably Juan Toscano-Anderson.
Okay.
I think, again, we're talking about 3-and-D wings. He's like close-ish. He's like 3-and-D wing adjacent.
And experienced.
He's a solid defender. I think he can provide you a lot in terms of help defense. He's not super great point of attack defender, but he can provide you something on the perimeter there. He's like below average to mediocre 3-point shooter, and he's of wing size. And I think that he's a little undersized, but he's of wing size. You know, he's bigger than Austin Reeves.
6'6".
So that's kind of where I would go next in terms of trying to fill out this archetype. That's probably the next closest on the roster. Again, it's not perfect, but like we said, there is no perfect. It's a grab bag.
6'6", shoots 36% from three for his career, just 32% last season, though, but that was a small sample size situation there. I wouldn't disagree with that. I think Juan Toscano-Anderson makes a lot of sense. I like his slashing ability. I think that can be important, particularly when teams start to really pay attention to LeBron, pay attention to Anthony Davis. They're really selling out on stopping those guys. I would trust Juan Toscano-Anderson, probably ahead of just about anybody on this team, to recognize the appropriate time and place to make a cut to the basket to free himself open for a look. I've seen him do that quite a bit. And I also trust that, you know, LeBron would put the pass on the money and would find him in those situations. I think defensively, the switchability is important. He's only played three seasons in the NBA, but again, 29 years old. This is a guy who's got experience playing basketball at high levels. It's weird to say because there's guys that are, you know, coming back from last year and everything that I like a lot too, but I do think Juan Toscano-Anderson is also in my group. But who rounds out your roster there? This is where we may differ.
It's honestly hard to say. Like, again, okay, so Thomas Bryant, like, if he is the right at the beginning of when he got to Washington, that first like half season in Washington, if he's that guy, then he's in this spot. I don't believe he'll be that guy, at least not right away. So I'm taking him out and I'm taking the gamble on Lonnie Walker.
Oh, okay.
I'm taking the gamble on him in this fifth spot. But again, I don't like any of my options. Like, I don't like any of the options here. So I'm putting the gamble on Lonnie Walker and his athleticism and hoping that eventually under Darvin Ham and with LeBron and AD and playing at higher stakes, he like can morph himself into like a league average defender. And from there, you just hope, you know, the 3-point shooting can be something. I think I'm taking the gamble on him. And hoping that he just naturally improves playing with higher stakes next to better players.
I think that's an interesting pick. You know, the defensive, he's a guy where the defensive concerns, particularly with the Spurs, with Popovich, he's talked about how he's going to bring defense to this team. Spurs fans had a hearty chuckle at that.
Yes.
But
we did too. We did too, to be fair.
Yeah, when we did too. Look, you look at all of his advanced metrics and they say, look, this guy's not a good defender. I think he's got a ton of bounce. He is athletic as hell. This is a guy who can do a lot of things for you, slash into the basket, but I'm concerned about getting stops and then getting easier buckets in transition. That's what I'm focusing on here. for my closing lineup. So I'm not going to put Lonnie Walker in my closing lineup until I see that he can get it down on the defensive end of the floor. And we need to know that his three-point shooting is somewhere better than it was last season. He was, what, 31% last season? Got to be better than that. My guess, and this is just a guess here, but we've seen him shoot close to 40% from three previously, even if it was on small sample size. I think he's going to settle in somewhere around 35, 36%. I think last season was a bit low for him. I do believe he's a better three-point shooter than that. But I'm not going to go Lonnie Walker, which maybe is kind of damning considering he is the taxpayer mid-level exception for the Lakers, the guy they could spend more on than anybody else, and yet he's not on the floor to close games for me. Ron, you give him the nod, which I think your pick there is probably more closer to reality than what I'm going to go to because of the cash, because of how much he's being paid. He's being paid to be that guy. Which brings us to another discussion in just a moment here that we're going to get to in terms of how much money is going to a specific player. But I'm going to go back to Stanley Johnson. I'm going to go Stanley Johnson. You know, some of the advanced metrics from last season showed pretty well with Stanley Johnson on the floor with LeBron, with Austin Reeves, with AD, these guys together. He's not a reliable three-point shooter, but he's big, he's physical, he's strong, he's switchy. He can occasionally knock in that corner three, and I'm going to buy that he can at least get a few percentage points higher from three and be a threat there. So I like the just overall, the size, the physicality, and the switchiness of this team defensively if I've got Stanley Johnson out there along with Juan Toscano-Anderson, Austin Reeves. Now, you can say there's not a lot of scoring on there. That's fair. Lonnie Walker certainly provides more scoring punch than these guys do. Realistically, if there's a trade, obviously those players or that player would be in this group. But I'm going to sell out on the defensive side of the ball here and do what I can to try to force turnovers, try to get stops, and then create easier scoring opportunities that way. So that's how I would approach it. I would go with Stanley Johnson. I feel like Stanley Johnson is getting underrated right now. I'm seeing him pushed way down on depth charts. I'm seeing people just kind of dismiss him. And I thought he was pretty good last season based on what the Lakers had to offer and what in the minutes that they got. So I'm going to go back with him, still a young player. I think he's going to show up to camp and be a bit better even than what we saw last season, particularly if the jumper comes around.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad option. I think Stanley Johnson absolutely can show improvement. I think it also depends on what is the closing situation. Are you maintaining a 5-point lead or are you coming back from down six? Like what is the more vital skill? I think, again, if you're trying to like hold on to for dear life to a 6-point lead with 3 minutes left, Stanley Johnson's probably your guy because he's going to get more stops. He's going to put more pressure than Lonnie Walker ever would. Even if Lonnie Walker shows like a huge leap defensively, he won't be what Stanley Johnson is. So I think that's a situation there. But if you need a scoring punch, if you're, you know, down five with a minute and a half left, I think Lonnie Walker is more your guy there. But it's, again, this is one of those things like
it's situation.
We're really scraping the bottom of the barrel here. It's for the fifth man in this lineup because we know it can't be Russ.
How bad is that? We're scraping the bottom of the barrel for a fifth player. It's not like we're scraping the bottom of the barrel to find a 10th rotation player. We're scraping the bottom of the barrel to find the fifth guy in the closing lineup. That worries me, Ron.
Yeah.
That's concerning.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not great. I think you'd much rather be in a situation. I mean, when we were in the, you know, in the championship season, we were going into the bubble. Avery Bradley says, oh, I'm not going to the bubble. And we're talking about closing lineups and it feels like, oh man, they could go like eight different ways here. Yeah, you have LeBron and AD, and then you could go Danny Green, Alex Caruso. You could go bigger here with this guy. Like you had so many options, and like you KCP, you have all these options, and you're like, wow, this is really great. You could make something here, and now it's just like, well, we have two for sure, one kind of for sure, and then we're just gambling. Like we're gambling, and so I think that's why everyone is obviously saying. I think even the Lakers are probably internally saying, we have to make a trade because there needs to be someone coming in who can be reliable in a closing lineup outside of LeBron and AD.
Yeah, realistically, any of these trades that we discussed, at least one of those players is going to be out. Obviously, if it's Kyrie, like he's definitely in there. If you wind up with Joe Harris in that deal, he's in there too. Buddy Hield and Miles Turner, you could argue both of them would be in the closing lineup. We can talk Turner, you know, does AD just play the five and, you know, whatever. That's a whole other discussion. But most likely those guys are on the floor to close. a Jazz deal. If you have Patrick Beverley, Bojan Bogdanovic, they're on the floor to close. Like, that's what we're talking about adding, is guys who can close out games for you. And this is part of why I agree. I think the Lakers do need to figure out a way to make something happen here. But this all begs the question, like, you went with Lonnie Walker, who's, what, $6 million and change, got that taxpayer mid-level. I went with Stanley Johnson, who is considerably less than that in terms of salary. Austin Reeves, considerably less than that in terms of salary. Juan Toscano-Anderson, considerably less. Based on the money, if Russell Westbrook's not on the floor, based on how much the Lakers are paying guys to perform, the lineup, it should be LeBron, AD, Kendrick Nunn, Lonnie Walker, and Talen Horton-Tucker. That's what the money says. And yet, Talen Horton-Tucker wasn't even a thought in my mind to close out this thing. Let's start there. Was THT in consideration at all for you?
No. THT, I don't think he's like a lost cause. I think he can still be a fine player.
Right.
But like, for all the reasons, not for all the reasons, for most of the reasons, I don't trust Russell Westbrook next to LeBron in a closing lineup. I don't trust Talen Horton-Tucker. He can't shoot the three. It's not reliable. Maybe it gets better, but he's not reliable. He's still a little turnover prone. He's still a little mistake prone when he's driving to the basket. Even though he is very good around the rim, he's very strong in that area of his game, he still is a bit turnover and mistake prone there. Defensively, he's solid as a point of attack defender because of his length, but he's not great on the help side of things. Like, I don't trust him as a fit next to LeBron for a lot of the same reasons I don't trust Russ as a fit next to LeBron. So the money talks, and really what the money is saying is they've spent their money poorly. Like,
that's what I'm getting at here.
Yeah.
I mean, and important, look, this is painful, but if they picked Alex Caruso, he's an automatic in this closing lineup, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a 35 minute a night guy on this team.
Yep. Yep. And yet Talen Horton-Tucker, and again, I see the upside here. I'm not saying I hate Talen Horton-Tucker. I'm not saying he's terrible. I think there's plenty of upside. I just think fit-wise, it doesn't make sense to put him on the floor. It's also why I've been saying that I don't want Russ and THT together. If you're going to keep Russ, you might as well trade THT, because you can't really play the two of them together and it creates too many complications there. Even if you are still bought into the upside of Talen Horton-Tucker, you're doing him a disservice by putting him on the floor with Russell Westbrook because of the issues that you create, the duplication of weaknesses that you have between those two players. But then you go to the next guy. Why did you not go with Kendrick Nunn?
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kendrick Nunn is an interesting option. I did think about him. Between him and Lonnie Walker is kind of where I was. Uh-huh. But for a similar reason to Thomas Bryant, I need to see what he is now. Yeah. He missed a whole season. I need to see what he is as a player. If he's 2020 Miami Heat Kendrick Nunn, he's better than Lonnie Walker and should be in the closing lineup. He's better than Lonnie Walker in almost every facet. If he's 2020 Miami Heat Kendrick Nunn, but I don't know that he is. He hasn't played in a year. And even 2021, when he did play, he was a little bit, he had taken a step back a little bit from 2020. So I just need to know who I'm getting with Kendrick Nunn before I put him in the closing lineup.
That's fair. Put him in that same category as Thomas Bryant, where you could see him skill set wise. He could be a fit in that closing line. Talen Horton-Tucker skill set wise is not a fit. Kendrick Nunn could be. depending on what version of him you get, and put him in there with Thomas Bryant in that category.
Yeah. So like in an ideal world, if everyone on this roster is playing their best basketball.
Yeah.
Well, if Russell Westbrook's playing his best, then he's in the closing lineup, but take away Russ.
Sure.
If everyone's playing their best, I think Kendrick Nunn, LeBron, Reeves, AD, Thomas Bryant is a pretty fascinating lineup.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's actually a pretty fascinating lineup that provides pretty much everything you're looking for. It's a little undersized on the wings, but it provides what you're looking for in terms of a solid mix of scoring and defensive presence. So that's where I would go. But again, the two of them are just such toss-ups given where they are health-wise.
Could you imagine if you're Russell Westbrook and you are not in the starting lineup and the backup point guard is? Like, that's even worse in my mind, because if you look at, say, the lineups that we built prior to talking about Kendrick Nunn, you could say, well, they wanted to go big on the wings, and so they went with wing players, right? Now if Kendrick Nunn is in the mix, you're taking the guy that's playing behind him, presumably not starting, and playing him in crunch time over Russell Westbrook at the same position. That's got to be that much more frustrating for Russ. I'm just trying to imagine, you know, how this season could go down if Russell Westbrook's on the roster. If that is the reality that we see, that's going to make it that much more irritating for Westbrook.
I mean, Kendrick Nunn is like at his best, at his absolute peak, yeah, which was 2020. He's a better shooter than Russell Westbrook, and he's a better defender than Russell Westbrook, which, if we're talking about a closing lineup next to LeBron and Anthony Davis, all we're looking at is shooting and defense. So it doesn't matter that Russ is by far a superior ball handler, playmaker, and, you know, scorer around the rim. None of that matters, because in a closing lineup with LeBron and AD, I don't need any of that. I need three-point shooting and I need defense. And Kendrick Nunn is not a great defender, but he's better than Russell Westbrook.
Yep. Yeah, that's a great way to sum that up. That's exactly what it comes down to. And man, this, Bron, I think, if anything, this exercise, like you said, really just underscores the need to get a trade done because of what we're trying to kind of cobble together into a closing lineup.
Yeah, no, it's
a little bit frightening.
It's a bummer.
The hard thing is that there's a lot of these guys where I look at and I say, you know what? I don't mind, you know, Juan Toscano-Anderson, that's a great pickup, right? Damian Jones, Thomas Bryant, great. You added on some, we didn't even talk about Troy Brown Jr. He could very easily be into the mix if his shooting does prove to be solid and if he can defend. He's got the skill set, in theory, to be potentially in this mix as well. And he's not even a guy that we talked about. He could very well find himself in the mix. Sure. All of these guys, though, individually you like, but then when you try to put the pieces together, you just go, ooh. This,
no,
yeah,
is that the best we can do? Is that the
right
best lineup we have right now? Really,
it's really going to take some guys separating themselves, because there's like this kind of, it's LeBron and AD, and then there's this, and then, you know, Austin Reeves a tier below, and then you've got this like jumble of players who can all potentially separate themselves from the mix. Russell Westbrook, I don't know, maybe he's kind of off to the side somewhere. I don't even know where you put him.
I don't know what the tier list looks like.
Yeah, but. But they've got this jumble of guys, Juan Toscano-Anderson and Lonnie Walker and Stanley Johnson and Troy Brown Jr. and all these players, THT. I think training camp is going to be really interesting, because that's going to be the first opportunity for there to be some kind of separation and for somebody, maybe multiple players, to emerge as the best of the bunch. And, okay, these are the wings that we're looking for.
Yeah, and I think Troy Brown Jr., you know, we didn't mention him until like the honorable mentions part of our
which maybe isn't fair.
I do want to, like, no offense to Troy Brown Jr. Troy Brown Jr. has been, for pretty much his entire career, a player who's like better in theory than in practice. Mm-hmm. Like the idea of Troy Brown Jr. has been much better than the result of Troy Brown Jr. And so if this is the year that in theory turns into results, then yeah, he absolutely could contend for that closing lineup, because he is kind of a 3-and-D guard wing-esque player. Like, he is that, but that's theory. Reality has shown that he's kind of you know, like, kind of not really conducive to winning basketball.
Can't you also say that about Lonnie Walker and Stanley Johnson? that the idea of them has always been a little bit better than what they've actually been. Definitely
about Lonnie and Stanley going back to when he was drafted. I think after about a year and a half or so, everyone gave up on the theory of Stanley Johnson too. Yeah. Like that didn't take long. Lonnie, I think, is still a in theory better than in practice, but you know what? He's making $6 million. So it's kind of like, you know, I guess I'm going to put him in this thing. Like, see what happens.
Yep. Man, can we just start preseason already? I want to get answers to these questions, and I hope if there's some way we can just hit the fast forward button, then we'll know whether or not a trade actually goes down and we can start really building this thing out. But yeah, Ron, again, sum it up. This just underscores that they need a trade. They need to get something done.
Yeah, they do need to do something, and I believe they will do something. I think it's, again, this Kevin Durant trade needs to happen. The Donovan Mitchell trade needs to happen before these conversations can really even start. You know, I'm sure the Lakers with all of these teams have had conversations that say, okay, if you make this trade, we'll do this trade. Right. Or if this trade goes down, we'll do this. And I think the understanding is there, but like no one can pull the trigger on anything until Kevin Durant or Donovan Mitchell is traded.
It's a lot. And that's in Jazz ruining all the fun of the summer. Well, Ron, thanks so much for coming on here and helping me break all this down. This was a fun exercise, maybe a little bit frightening exercise too, but still good to go through to try to figure out exactly what the Lakers' closing lineup can look like, even if the result is just, they probably need some different players.
Yeah, and in typical you and me fashion, we said we were going to try to go about 15 minutes, and we ended up at 38. So
yep, that's the way it goes. That's the way it goes when we get together and talk basketball. But Lakers Nation, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you do subscribe to the Lakers Nation YouTube channel. Ring the notification bell. Don't forget to go follow the Lakers Nation podcast as well over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. Till next time, everybody. Stay safe and see ya.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.